Is property broken?
Talking about properties broken, you told me a very funny story at breakfast about how you're running the numbers on your portfolio and thought, actually, property doesn't work at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, look, this is a little embarrassing. Got to the other end and it didn't look high enough. And I just thought to myself, oh, well, I've probably just the assumptions that I've used are probably a bit light. And
yeah.
It will actually end up better. But actually, it took someone else to point out that I just actually missed it, had a transposition error.
Yeah. But there was a small period of time where you thought, property doesn't work.
Yeah. And I was really questioning myself. Yeah.
What have I done with my life?
Yeah. So, welcome to Checks and Balances brought to you by Partners Life. I'm Michael Vincent. This is James Blair. And today we've got Managing Director of Lighthouse, Matthew Harris, here to tell us about his 2024 property predictions.
Matthew, it's been a while.
Hey, it's good to be back, especially because you guys have become significantly more famous since I was last on
this podcast. You were going to say prettier. I was like, yeah, the Botox is working.
The Botox is working. Toxed, you know, we've got a new studio, so thank you for paying for it. And thank you to Partners Life.
Thank you, Partners Life.
Yeah. Yeah.
So today we're talking about your property predictions. And I think property is, you know, always a thing that, you know, as a property developer, property investor, and property accountant, you'll always want to talk about. But very interesting with what's happened over the past 18 months, interest rates at 2%, jumping to 7%, a lot of pain out there. But it's quite interesting what will happen this year.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, as a property investor, long-time property investor, property accountant, developer, all those things, property's never far from my mind, and I'm one of those people that will, you know, go for a walk and just look at houses.
Yeah.
I can see a house and I go, right, I could add value to that, or that's interesting, et cetera, et cetera. But to be honest, the last 18 months, being a property investor, or anyone who owns property, owner-occupied included, has not been that pleasant.
My first question, Matt, is, are you okay?
Yeah, I mean, emotionally hanging on by threads.
Yeah.
Fiscally, it's difficult. But, yeah. You know, I luckily am exposed to you two, obviously, and the industry that we're in is all about long-term financial growth and well-being. And I know enough to know that this isn't going to last forever. But yeah. Even knowing those things and James about to tell you with investments, it's, you know, it's still quite hard to hold the line sometimes.
Well, it doesn't make it any easier, right? Like, everyone's got that rational brain of it's market cycle, it goes up, it goes down, it'll get back at some point. But then as you're watching the interest rates click incrementally higher and the dollars that come out of your bank account also click incrementally higher, surely you must start to question, am I in the right game here?
Yeah. Is property broken?
Yeah. Talking about properties broken, you told me a very funny story at breakfast on Friday about how you're running the numbers on your portfolio and maybe you got a calculation wrong and thought, actually, property doesn't work at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, look, this is a little embarrassing because we've hit peak interest rates.
Yeah.
And they're a little bit higher and they came a little bit quicker than we were all expecting. Mm. So after 18 months, and as listeners will know, I've got a reasonably sized portfolio, which, you know, on paper sounds really great, but in reality, in high interest rate environments, is a bit of a cash flow drag.
Yeah.
So it's got to the point that 18 months, and right at the beginning, we did some adjustment to the portfolio, sold some things, shuffled loans. That was meant to last the duration of the downturn. It's dragged on a bit. So
can we just get on with it?
Yeah. So we've got to the point now where, you know, the average interest rate in the portfolio is about 6.5%, which is about twice what it was at the beginning of the 18-month period.
Yeah.
So I went back to the drawing board to run some numbers and go, what I wanted to do was say, hey, over the next 5 years, what do the figures look like in terms of the cost of holding versus the capital growth rate? And I applied what I consider to be a pretty conservative annualized growth rate of 6%. I got to the other end and it didn't look high enough. And I just thought to myself, oh, well, I've probably just the assumptions that I've used are probably a bit light. And
yeah.
It will actually end up better. But actually, it took someone else to point out that I just actually missed it, had a transposition error. And property still does work.
Yeah.
And it works really well based on those numbers. So yeah, I think it's sometimes it's important as any investor and someone who's trying to manage finances to sit down and crunch the numbers and go, is this going to work? And they go, okay, well, short term it might not. But if I add 5 years onto this, what's it going to look like?
Yeah. But there was a small period of time where you thought, property doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah, and I was really questioning myself. Yeah.
What have I done with my life?
Yeah. So you kind of mentioned, we turned that story that we've hit peak interest rates. What are your predictions this year for, maybe not official cash rate, but just interest rates in general? Where do you think they're heading, and what do you think the timeline is for that?
Yeah, so I think it's a pretty interesting environment in New Zealand currently with interest rates. I do believe that we're at peak interest rates.
Yeah.
The narrative coming out of the Reserve Bank is that we potentially are not.
Mm.
And I think it was one other bank that economists had ANZ. A prediction, ANZ, yeah. That we're not. I think that's wrong. Yeah. I think the Reserve Bank is just posturing. They don't want
us to start. Bit of signaling to the market.
Yeah, yeah, they don't want us to start spending too soon.
Yeah.
And interesting enough, before I make my prediction, is I was in Australia last week, and it was really interesting for me to read an article from in the newspaper that a number of politicians had got together to put pressure on the Australian Reserve Bank to lower interest rates because they thought inflation was under control and actually was just causing more harm.
Yeah.
Good. And I kind of almost feel like that we're there in New Zealand right now. And the reason I say that is the bank behavior around interest rates is still so strict.
Yeah.
And as someone with a large portfolio, I'm quite used to negotiating with the bank with interest rates. And nearly always they will provide a 0.5% discount for people with a lot of debt, for not a better way of saying it. And even banks right now are pushing back on that. I think, well, actually it's got a bit far.
Yeah.
That 0.5% difference will trail out over 6 months or 12 months, depending on what you do, and make a real big difference. So I thought it was really interesting that politicians who are meant to be bipartisan, so they're not meant to do that kind of thing, have gone, enough's enough.
Yeah.
And I think we need to see more of it in New Zealand.
Yeah. I agree with the separation of church and state, for lack of a better term, where the Reserve Bank should be independent, because you open up a very kind of tricky door there, where as politicians exert political influence on the Reserve Bank, which has an independent mandate just to look out for the health of the economy, what you ultimately see is, as more politicians creep into putting pressure on them, all of a sudden it's election time. So now where does the pressure come from, and what do they want, and what does the lolly scramble look like? Because everyone throws out a lolly scramble at election time. But I tend to agree with the fact I think we're at peak interest rates. I don't think they're going to do another rate. I think that was just a bit of posturing and a bit of signaling. They're pretty hawkish. But the domestic inflation isn't quite under control yet. But I think that what I find really frustrating is we see the cost of funds in the background bouncing around, and we see the upfront pain that Kiwis are going through. Large portfolio, one house, two houses, doesn't matter. You know, everyone's got a family, cost of living crisis going through the roof. And I'm like, this really blunt lever that they're pulling, you know, to keep the official cash rate high, is just not very effective. Like, it just, there's got to be a way that they could do it better than just, okay, we're just going to pull the one lever and that's it, and everyone has to suffer equally or disproportionately depending on how much debt you have.
Yeah, and I think if you look at the bank profits, which continue to soar, there's something in there that's not quite right.
Yeah.
So, you know, not to labour the point, my prediction a couple of months ago is that we might see an OCR drop in February 28. I probably, if I made that prediction today, I would say I don't expect that anymore.
Yeah.
But I don't expect it to go up either.
Yeah.
I think they will hold the line. I think we are at peak interest rates, and from here it will be downward only.
Yeah.
A OCR drop in Feb is incredibly bullish, and I would say somewhat hoping. We had Jared Kerr on, and just for reference, just remember, so we're filming this in February. People will know what's going to happen with the next OCR announcement by the time this comes out.
Yes.
Important. But when we had Jared Kerr, the chief economist at Kiwi Bank, come on, he was talking, really interesting guy, kept it really simple, so luckily Mike and I could follow. And he was talking about how he thought the OCR would start getting cut in November, and then it would keep cutting because it's that soft landing they talk about, right, is getting inflation to 1 and 3. So you've got to get it down to 3, but then you don't want too much chaos of keeping it too high for too long.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And when you're cutting, you just cut, because why hang around?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so you can really see it in the property market at the moment. A couple of things happened. The election, obviously, last year. And I think we'll talk about that shortly, some of the glimmers of hope that I think I see in the property market because of that election. But that kind of put the brakes on what was already a stagnant property market.
Yeah.
And then now we've got I feel like we have all the long weekends at the start of the year, which are great because it's summer and we want to be at the beach, but it's difficult for business. It's difficult for real estate agents to sell houses when everyone's away.
Mm.
And then we've got an OCR cut or not cut coming on 28.
Or hike.
You know, so everyone's sitting on their hands at the moment in the property market. So I think we've got to get through 28 Feb and then the year for property will begin.
The other thing I would say, though, is probably, when would you say, Mike, because there's clearly been a pickup and an appetite for people to get on with it in the property market than the majority of last year. At what point would you say things started to turn around a little bit?
So probably like 4 weeks before the election was when behaviours started to, or sentiment started to change, and then behaviour started to change. And people are definitely more active out there, but, and this may sound weird, it's very difficult to gauge, for us to gauge how much of it is just lighthouse and how much of it is the market. Because, you know, you got to remember, we spend a lot of time, you know, being out in the market, doing the brand stuff, you know, doing the podcast, doing events, you know, speaking. So I'm never going to get a good sense from other mortgage brokers or other mortgage brokerage houses of how much business they have on, right? Because they're always going to tell me, oh yeah, mate, flat stick, don't worry about it, because I'm their competition. But I would say for us, yep, it's definitely busier. There definitely seems to be a sentiment change. Real estate agents are backing that up a bit as well. They're now working 2 days a weekend instead of a one day on a weekend, you know. So there's definitely some more activity out there. But to Matt's point, activity doesn't always result in transactions. And I think the flood of transactions is what we're yet to be seen. Yeah.
Yeah.
But we have seen a tick up in
property prices. We have seen an uplift in transactions. But the baseline for transactions where we're coming from is exceptionally low.
Yeah, agree. And I agree to your point that Lighthouse is a bit of an ecosystem.
Yeah.
And we are more bullish than others on long-term assets because that's what we believe in.
Mm.
And I also agree with your point, there's lots of activity. Lots of open homes getting attended, lots of pre-approvals getting processed, but the buying part hasn't begun.
I've even noticed it on my street, like driving home, the amount of houses that are now starting to come onto the market. And when I think about clients that I've been talking to where they've said, oh, I'm thinking about selling or downsizing or whatever, and we're talking 12 months ago, I'm like, oh, you really don't want to do that. That's going to cost you quite a bit of cash. Just hold on for a little bit. And I feel like some of those people are like, okay, I've seen a bit of a bounce. We're in summer. I don't want to wait till summer next year. And they're starting to get on with it. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens in like February, March, April.
Yeah. I think the other thing is sort of around like the news sentiment and the what's in the media as well. It's still quite mixed to quite negative, I would say. I know the media is usually quite negative on things, and when property takes off again, they'll be negative on that as well. But there's really not great messages out there for anyone looking to invest, do business, you know, buy a house, buy an investment property in the market at the moment, which I think probably adds to it a little bit as well.
Yeah, and I think that investor sentiment obviously is hugely important.
Yeah,
it drives behavior. But I've blamed the media before for property cycles, and I'll do it again.
Yeah,
to the day I die.
Yeah, they are responsible for a lot of the movement in properties at the starts and the beginnings. In the middle, it's human activity and behavior.
The momentum, yeah.
And for those sitting here watching this going, well, you know, it's interesting to be sitting around doing a property only podcast where we're just talking about property and the property market. The reality is that it's a huge part of everyone's life in New Zealand and overseas, and the media write about it for that reason.
Yeah.
Before we move on, we talk all the time about planning and growing our wealth, but protecting that wealth is just as important. That's why having the right insurance in place can help when life goes unexpectedly.
And that's why this episode is brought to you by Partners Life, a New Zealand-operated award-winning insurance provider with over 300,000 Kiwis insured and 89% of claims paid.
Partners Life understand that having some insurance is better than having no insurance. They have flexible and personalized solutions for any budget or situation.
Check out their website in our show notes below.
Yep. And when it comes to property investors, so I think you wrote in your recent newsletter that about one third of property transactions are property investors. How do you think property investors are feeling? I mean, you've alluded to it with your own situation, but how are they feeling at the moment, do you think?
Yeah, I think they hopefully are starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel. But that 18 months for property investors wasn't all financial. You might remember the previous government. What was the leader's name? Can't quite recall. but they pretty much had a campaign of bashing property investors. Mm. Landlords are the devil. Landlords don't deserve deductions, et cetera, et cetera. And they made a huge amount of changes to the tax landscape, which hurt investors' pockets well before high interest rates.
Yeah.
Then what happened? So finally, there's a bit of light at the end of the tunnel, and then interest rates start to climb, and they start to climb rapidly. So I think if you're a property investor who's held on this long, well done. Long-term wealth creation is just that. You have to stay the course. And I think there's some hope for you. Let's talk about the new government that we've got and some of the changes that they're making.
Yeah, so I mean, they've come out and sort of said they're going to roll back some of the tax that the previous government came in.
Yep.
Other than, you know, maybe mess around with the bright line a little bit. Can you give us a quick rundown on what the changes are, or the major changes that they've kind of proposed?
Yep, I think the really important one is interest deductibility is coming back in. I think for me, when that came out, I was one surprised, and none of the tax community really saw that coming. There was no consultation, which is odd for a government to majorly change tax laws without consulting. But it was just a fairness issue for me. It treated two property investors in pretty much the same situation differently. So a new build investor who owns the same asset class and is potentially the same person, mum and dad investor, has two incomes, maybe a kid or two, lots of bills to pay, they can still claim interest. Someone else has an in-situ property, so a non-new build, the same type of investors, again, mum and dad, two kids, bills to pay, they cannot claim interest. So it changed the financial metrics of pretty much the same investment, and it was unequitable and it was just unfair.
Yeah, and for all of those who are saying, the way they pitch it, you know, we're closing this tax loophole, it's not a bloody loophole. It's just basic tax.
Yeah. The general proposition, and from my days as a tax man, it's nexus with income. That's literal concept, DA1 of the Income Tax Act. It basically says that you can have a deduction for anything that is incurred in the course of furtherance of a taxable activity. So basically, if it is related to the making of the money that you pay tax on, you get to claim it.
Yeah.
And when it comes to interest deductibility, Matt, like, when are changes coming out?
Yep.
What do they look like?
So I like this about National. They've been quite quick to get it out into the market, a little bit slower to get the actual policy. But we've got interest deductibility getting phased back in. It's going to be 60% for the 2024 year, and we're going to be at 100% deductibility by 2026.
Nice.
So I can see their want to manage revenues for the government with, you know, the optics of giving it back. But I think that together with Brightline coming back to 2 years, so a real quick history on Brightline. It started at 2 years. Brightline was brought in to stop people speculating effectively. So buying and selling properties in a short-term period and not paying tax, and that was to do with our intention-based property regime. Complicated because we don't have a capital gains tax.
Yeah.
So it was 2 years originally. That was a great amount of time that stopped short-term speculating. 2 years is not a short-term trade. And I thought it was a good amount of time. Then it went to 5 years in 2018. And then went to 10 years in 2021. And at 10 years, it might as well have been a capital gains tax. So the government's also moved to reduce that back to 2 years. That is going to happen in 1 July. Again, no official commentary from Inland Revenue. So until we see that, take it with a grain of salt, but the government has confirmed it via media releases.
Yeah.
They've also made a little bit retrospective. So what they're saying is if you've already owned a property at 2 years, for 2 years by July, you can sell it tax-free.
Yeah.
So I think that's quite useful because there will be investors still, even though they've held on and they can see the light of the tunnel, will just say, I've had enough.
Yeah.
And I think it's, because we don't have a capital gains tax, it is unfair to tax a capital transaction that was bought for a long-term purpose just because the person has realized they can't afford it, they're not cut out for
situations
it.
Situations change.
And people argue, you know, that it should be taxed. Well, that might be the case, and I don't doubt that one day we'll see a capital gains tax in New Zealand, but the reality is we don't have one.
Yeah.
If I sold a business tomorrow, I would not be taxed and no one would bat an eye.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And if we're coming back to the impact on property transactions, you're property prices, you're not the two-year bright line, you're not stuck as long, right? So maybe more people are willing to get involved, which has a positive impact on house prices. The interest deductibility changes. You know, on a $1 million mortgage, it's 7% interest rate. You're paying $70,000 in interest, which is not a tax deductible expense. It's an existing property. Mm. Now you're able, we're talking tens of thousands of dollars of an impact on your tax bill.
That's potentially $30,000 if you're at 33%.
Yeah.
It's a huge, huge difference. And so when we're talking about investor sentiment, these things are the things that lift sentiment in the market.
Yeah. What else is National looking at? No-cause evictions?
So I think that's a really good one. So we'll all remember that Labor pushed through a whole lot of changes to the Tenancies Act, and they did that during COVID, and there was some of it that was legitimate. They didn't want people to be out, you know, kicked out of houses with COVID. But a lot of it actually was just protecting the tenant a little too much. Mm. And I think any time that a government moves to restrict the rights of a person who owns that property or an investor or whatever, you're going to have problems. And what happened is we saw a change in behaviour of a lot of landlords, especially those who are at the end of their wealth creation cycle. They were just leaving houses empty because they didn't want the hassle of not being able to evict tenants. And as someone who's had a couple of really bad tenants, it's very difficult. Mm. It takes a very, very long time to go through the tenancy tribunal and actually get rid of them.
Yeah.
And they don't pay you through that whole time. And whilst the tribunal might order payment, and it's all, you know, that's from a conceptual point of view, that it's fine to protect the rights of tenants. And I definitely believe that they should be protected. And also, I don't believe that landlords are this big, bad group of people that are just out for money. They're not. Our client base tells us they're not. They're mum and dad investors. The amount of times I have meetings and someone hasn't raised their rent for 4 or 5 years is common.
Yeah.
Mm. So investors and landlords are good people in New Zealand, and they will get taken advantage of. So I think that is another thing that will make people return to the market.
Yeah.
It's interesting the way that society kind of pigeonholes certain people. Mm. It's like tenants are good and landlords are bad, but they're all just people, right? And the reality is there's good tenants, good landlords, bad owners, majority are good, but there's some bad eggs everywhere. And I get the piece around like who's got control in the relationship. But the other piece is you have to incentivize landlords to be involved in the market, because the impact to tenants, and the really, we'll talk about migration numbers in a second. The really interesting thing is when you see all these people coming to New Zealand, if you do not have people where there's demand to build houses, developers going, I can sell a house, because that's another big thing which we'll talk about in a second, tenants are going to be completely screwed.
Yeah. Yeah, and I definitely agree that there has to be incentive for a free market to operate if that's the way that New Zealand is operating. And I think that's a really, really great point. And the moment that you take residential landlords out of the picture in New Zealand, you've got a housing crisis like no country's ever seen. Mm. The cost of housing in this country is huge. The government spends a huge amount of money accommodating people. And if we really quickly roll back to the interest deductibility rules, what really cemented that whole thing for me that it was just landlord bashing it was when they allowed an exemption for social housing, but they didn't allow interest deduction for Airbnbs. So those two things together showed you that they know there's a housing shortage. They don't want people turning to Airbnb, because that's natural inclination, lift yield. But if you give it to the government to use, or social housing provider, basically the government, someone's funding in the government, then you can have your deduction. And that tells me they know the state of property in New Zealand. They know that they can't provide accommodation at the same cost effectiveness as a private landlord.
The market, And as a property developer yourself, where are you looking at the moment? What are you thinking about the supply and demand of property over the next kind of 12, 24 months?
Yeah, I think there's a huge problem coming.
Yeah.
So no one is consenting. Consents are historically low. And the reason being is that credit is low. Mm. Property developers need more credit than anyone. But we've also got this really awful situation at the moment where not only is credit hard to get and very expensive, sale prices are low, but the cost of building is still very high.
Mm.
So margins for property investors have shrunk. And so most really big property investors run like 10, 11, 12% margin on a development, which is not a hell of a lot of margin when you think of, you know, a normal business margin. Mm. But
and the size of the, like you think about the size of the widget,
yep.
the problems that can arise with that size widget,
yep.
or a like the timing yep. implications.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's why so many developers don't last and so many developers have been beaten up in the last couple of years.
Yeah, correct. Because if you take that 11% margin and then you take it, you take in 18 months, 12 to 18 months to deliver a project and the property market's gone down 20%, right? The math doesn't work.
Yeah.
So as a smaller developer, I'm proud to say that I could get away with a development margin of about 16%.
Yeah.
But even that is a huge risk. And as a smaller developer, the pretty much funders don't fund below that margin anyway.
No.
So
yeah.
So what, to get to the point, no consenting, developers don't have credit, and as a result, there's no properties getting built at the moment.
And immigration, we've seen, what was it, 130,000 people in the last 12 months.
Yeah, yeah, let's talk about that because this seems like a, so, I mean, we're talking about property prices, but immediately I start also thinking about, property prices, but also like what the hell's going to happen to the rental market.
Yep.
So you've got all, the borders are open, you've got these people flooding into New Zealand, they're all, I assume, going to leave somewhere, need somewhere to live. What is going to happen? This sounds like a recipe for disaster.
Oh, it's awesome. I was a little bit surprised actually in those October immigration stats, but pleasantly surprised.
Yeah.
So as someone who for the last couple of years, especially as we took so long to come out of COVID and New Zealand became a bit of a desert wasteland, was advocating for more people to come in, less to leave to Australia. And we all saw lots of our colleagues, friends, et cetera, leave to London, Australia, go seeking opportunity because New Zealand was just taking too long to come out of it. It's really pleasing to see those figures. And I think also New Zealand, unlike a lot of other countries, is very good with its migration rules in that they're quite tight. So the majority of those people coming in are skilled.
Yeah.
They have the skills that we want. They have a different way of thinking. They are, and they're motivated.
Mm.
But where the hell are they going to live?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So what's going to happen? What is going to happen to... Maybe start with, with rents. I can't see this because the other problem that's going to happen, right, is we've got people leaving the country. We need people coming to the country. I've got this big thing at the moment where, you know, people have been down on New Zealand and I really want to see a narrative where, especially national government, you know, have historically incentivized business transaction, created the right kind of environment. I want New Zealand to be that place where we're really really proud of, you know, what we're building and there's a good vibe around the place. But I'm worried. I'm worried that rents are going to skyrocket and then I'm worried that there's going to be a turnaround in, you know, because the migration chat hasn't started around there's too many people coming into the country. There's just people observing there's a lot of people coming into the country. That is going to change. So what do we think is going to happen with rental prices? How high are they going to jump over the next 12 months?
Yeah. Hi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've already seen it. You've already seen the average rent clip up pretty quickly. And that's due to a number of factors, not just demand, but also the cost, the associated cost of the interest rate, which is a huge, huge cost on property investors.
Yeah. So if we roll back to when interest deductibility was removed, and I think I wrote a few articles and I was definitely on this podcast making my opinions known, I predicted at that time that we'd see rent skyrocket, and what we didn't know at that time was how high interest rates were going to go, and also just the general cost of everything in New Zealand has increased substantially. So what that means is if I'm a landlord and I need to replace a window or a roof or something like that, the cost of that has also gone up. So I really think that we're going to see rents in New Zealand move up pretty rapidly. The only thing that slows it down is what I went back to before, the good landlord way of thinking that we have in New Zealand where we don't raise rents quick enough and we don't do it often enough. So that's got a little bit of a drag on the rent market. And then under the Labor changes that Labor made, you can only increase rents every 12 months, every 12 months. So obviously there's a little bit of lag, but I expect rents to go up significantly. If I was going to make a prediction, I think by the time we end this year, they're going to be up 30%.
Yeah. 30%.
Yeah.
Matthew, if there's people who are renting right now, that is a terrifying
thought. I believe it. But the reality is, if we go back to the demographic of the people that provide property in this property in this country, they are mum and dad investors, and they are also on fixed incomes, and they literally at the moment, the negativity on some of these people are topping up $1,000 every fortnight to subsidize someone else's accommodation.
When we did some research with Velocity last year, one of the pieces that they spoke about, because we were like, why aren't rents jumping at a high rate? And one of the pieces they were talking about is people can only afford to pay so much of their paycheck, right? And you think about all the inflation numbers and the impact off the back of it. It'll be interesting how that impacts rental prices. But the other piece as well is I've just got in my head the cash flow projections I put together for customers and how negative they are for like new property investors.
Yep.
But then I'm starting to think about over the next little while how much things might change, because you've got interest rates which will start coming down. If rents start going up, it could really start to flip some of those projections.
Yep.
And obviously this is not an overnight thing. We're kind of forecasting probably from here to the end of like 2025 is the journey that'll happen.
Yep.
But those cash flows could become quite attractive.
Yeah, they could. And they a lot of those people will be carrying a lot of losses forward, and we'll start to write the ship. But I look at it still and I go, the average house price in New Zealand's, it's dropped a bit now, but still around the $900,000 mark. A house of a $900,000 value will only rent for about $700 a week currently. Mm. The figures don't work.
Yeah.
And I maybe 30% is a little bit higher. I've been wrong before, but I've also been right before. So so just watch this space. And I do think some of that is offset by the higher incomes that people are earning, and incomes have increased significantly over the last 2 years.
Yeah. So that's your prediction for rents. What do you think for property prices this year?
Yeah. So I think 6.5% on an annualized basis, which I think people will be happy with.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd back that. I mean, I think probably a little bit more. I think towards the back end of the year, as soon as the official cash rate drops and the banks really drop their interest rates a bit, I think that back end of the year is going to bump it up to sort of 9-10%.
Yeah.
I think we're going to have, that'll be the start of the run.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that too. And I think 2024 will be a year where assuming no big geopolitical things happen where it all goes...
No more wars.
Yeah. Goes bad very quickly. All things remaining the same. I think that, and then 2025, I reckon is going to be a gangbuster year.
Yeah.
Or at least that's what I tell myself.
I 100% agree though. And the reality of it is that, you know, all these people who talk about property being unproductive asset, all that stuff, are actually not 100% correct. The property market in New Zealand drives a lot of the rest of the economy. When houses get built, that provides jobs for everyone who wires the house to makes the wiring. Within the financial services ecosystem, there's a huge amount of growth driven off the back of property prices. And the reality is the way the financial system is set up currently is that we go through these cycles, and they're pretty easy to see the past ones and pretty easy to understand that we're going to go through it again.
Yeah.
And those cycles and the way that system work basically rewards asset ownership, which is why it's one of the pillars of our philosophy at Lighthouse, because it just works.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be an interesting podcast to do in the future, actually. The all the financial benefit off the back of a property transaction and all the other people who are involved.
Thank the ecosystem.
Thank you very much, Matt. That's a great idea. And thank you for joining us.
Pleasure.
We need to get you on more often. The people love you. As soon as you share that link on that Instagram story, mate, we blow up in terms of views. So we've got to get you back more often.
Thank you. I love coming on, and it's always good to chat to you guys.
Cool. Okay. Thanks, Matt. And also, thank you, Partners Live, for all your love with the sponsorship. We're doing great things. Please make sure you do your bit and subscribe, review, and like, and we will see you next time.
Cheers.